The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Friday, July 31st. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss Campbell fighting and Leaky Black. Matt Norlander is not here with me. He's on vacation, but I still wanted to record a second episode this week, and I didn't want to do it alone. So I made a call to the CBS Sports bullpen, and I grabbed Mike Gundy's biggest enemy, Oklahoma State football fans' favorite Oklahoma State graduate, the always working, always busy, very important member of the CBS Sports staff, Kyle Boone. Kyle Boone, welcome to the Eye on College Basketball podcast. Before we go any farther, I need to know if you properly respect Terry Teagle. Do you recognize him as a legend or not?
I do believe that Terry Teagle is a legend. I actually did some homework on Tony Hinkle before this podcast, just in case. I fall in line with all the ideals of the college basketball, Eye on College Basketball podcast. Absolutely.
I forgot about Tony Hinkle, but that was a highlight of the season before it was, of course, cut short by COVID-19. But Tony Hinkle, he is a legend in his own right, just like Terry Teagle and Larnell. All right, let's get into it. So the big news of the week, so far at least, is that Baylor's Maceo Teague is withdrawn from the 2020 NBA draft. It's not a surprise, but it's still a significant development for those unfamiliar. He's a 6'3 guard, averaged 13.9 points, 4.6 rebounds last season for a Baylor team that finished 26-4 and ranked number 3 at KenPom. He was Baylor's second leading scorer. So like I wrote in a column, you can read it at CBSSports.com, it's one big decision down, one big decision to go for Scott Drew's Baylor Bears. If Jared Butler, Baylor's leading scorer, also withdraws from the NBA draft, Baylor looks like a legit national title contender for the second straight season. So, Kyle, let's start here. Kansas is Kansas, and West Virginia and Texas Tech should be good again. But if Jared Butler does come back, and that is what is expected, is it obvious to you that Baylor should be the favorite in the Big 12?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I think Baylor's pretty clearly not only probably the best team in the Big 12, but, you know, maybe the best team in college basketball next season if Jared Butler returns. Now, I think there's probably a question as to whether or not he stays or goes. I think that he's probably getting some serious consideration as maybe a late first rounder. So he has a legitimately, you know, tough decision ahead of him. But if he comes back, you know, like you said, Kansas is Kansas. Texas Tech is going to be good. You know, I think the top of the Big 12 is going to be really strong, but I think Baylor is going to be kind of in its own tier next season if Jared Butler does indeed return.
And it's interesting because I think if I had to bet today, I would bet he is back at Baylor, but you're right. He has a decision to make, and it's a decision that not only for him, but everybody else is complicated by the COVID-19 pandemic. In other words, in normal circumstances, underclassmen who have declared for the NBA draft but are considering withdrawing, they're picking between two obvious things. Do I want to play college basketball at least one more season, or do I want to get on with my professional career, whatever that looks like? Now you're kind of picking between a lot of unknown stuff. If you withdraw from the draft, are you actually going to have a college basketball season? Like, are you really going back to college basketball? Are we going to play? If so, when? If so, how often? When does the season start? When is it supposed to end? It's not clear if you come back to college basketball in the middle of a pandemic that you're actually going to play another year of college basketball. And I know that is something other prospects are considering, and I would imagine, you know, Jared Butler is taking that under consideration as well. But for the sake of the conversation, we'll pretend that he does come back. And if that happens, Baylor brings the top three scores back from last season's team. Three guys who averaged at least 9.9 points per game. They'll have seven of their top nine back from, again, a team that went 26-4 and finished third in KenPom. They were going to be probably a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. And this is another point I made in the column that I wrote a couple of nights ago, is that, listen, the 2020 NCAA tournament being canceled was awful for a variety of reasons. On the list of things that are awful in America over the past 5 months, that's significantly down the list, I acknowledge. But still, like, we're used to having it. We didn't get it. It was a bit of a bummer. But it's especially a bummer, I think, for schools like Dayton, San Diego State, Gonzaga, Baylor, you know, schools that had legitimate chances, rare legitimate chances to win their first national championship. And while it is true that, you know, Dayton will never get that back, Obi Toppin off to the NBA, they don't project as a serious nationally relevant team again in the 2020-21 season. And San Diego State, after losing Malachi Flynn, probably doesn't project as a nationally relevant team in the 2020-21 season. It is interesting that, and I talked to Scott Drew about this the other night, it's interesting that Baylor has a chance to like be just as good this upcoming season as they were last season, which is a testament to the job that Scott's doing there, but also to, you know, to the fact that, you know, they are in an interesting spot where they were really, really, really good, but not really, really, really good because of obvious lottery picks or even guaranteed first round picks. In other words, everybody who can come back, you know, doesn't necessarily have obvious NBA opportunities ahead of them. So they might really all come back. And then, yeah, I have Gonzaga number one in the top 25 and one right now. But I have Baylor number two, and if somebody wanted to make Baylor number one, I got no issue with it. They're a totally reasonable option to put at the top of the preseason AP poll.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that Baylor and Gonzaga are going to be at the top of the preseason rankings next season. You make a really good point just about Baylor's continuity in general, because, you know, for a lot of teams that were good this past season, like you mentioned, Dayton, we'll never have an Obi Toppin like player probably ever. Probably never have as good a team as they had this past season. Baylor won 23 games in a row last season. They were number one in the polls for most of the year, and they slipped off a little bit late at the end of the season, lost three of their last five games. But, you know, we're still talking about a Baylor team that was pretty clearly going to be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Coming back next season, if they get Jared Butler, obviously, That's a team that I think is going to be the favorite in the Big 12, a team that is probably better than the team we saw last season. And I think that's going to be scary for college basketball and for obviously the Big 12.
They got a chance to win their first conference championship since 1950. I mean, that's like 5 years before my dad was born. I mean, it's insane. I mean, it's not insane. It's Baylor, and they it's not a strong basketball tradition. But, you know, Scott has checked so many boxes since he took over that horrendous situation and really turned Baylor into a consistent winner. But the next step is winning a conference championship, and the next step is going to a Final Four. Neither of those things have happened at Baylor since 1950. That is the last conference championship. It's also the last time they were in the Final Four. Again, if Jared Butler follows Maceo Teague's lead and returns to school, on paper, at least, they've got a real chance to win a conference title for the first time since 1950, go to the Final Four for the first time since 1950. Though it should be pointed out, Kansas, I also have as a preseason top 10 team. West Virginia and Texas Tech, I have as preseason top 20 teams. And while I've got you here and we're focused on the Big 12, are Oklahoma State fans fired up for this season because of the presence of Cade Cunningham? Or is it limited to some degree because at this moment it appears they're not going to be allowed to play in the 2021 NCAA tournament, even if they were to go undefeated?
Yeah, I think they're fired up just in general about the fact that Cade Cunningham, who had options to go to the G League, play overseas, go to, you know, Kentucky or wherever he wanted, committed to Oklahoma State not once, but twice. And then he did it the second time knowing that Oklahoma State was facing a postseason ban. So they're fired up about that. I think pretty clearly right now, Cade Cunningham's the favorite to go number one in the 2021 NBA draft. So OSU's really never had a player of that ilk on its campus. So it'll be, I think OSU fans are pretty excited about that. I think it's kind of tampered down, obviously, with the fact that a postseason ban is in order for this upcoming season. But, you know, OSU's appealing that. We'll wait to see kind of how that shakes out. But yeah, I don't think they're, you know, making too much about it, just knowing the fact that, you know, it's possible that Oklahoma State has the best player in college basketball on its campus next season.
You're close to that program. Do they think, listen, they are appealing, as you point out, and, you know, why not? It, you know, like you have an option to appeal, you might as well. But do they think there's a realistic chance that could get reversed and they could have the punishment for that NCAA case, you know, minimized at least some? Do they think it's realistic that you know, they will be allowed to compete in the Big 12 tournament and then, in theory, the NCAA tournament?
I don't know if they think it's realistic. You know, I think if you go back to when they were dealing with this case, they really thought the first time that they would get off pretty lenient in terms of, you know, maybe they have a fine that they have to pay. They have faced a loss of scholarships or something, kind of a slap on the wrist. So when they got the postseason ban, I know people at Oklahoma State were absolutely shocked. They did not expect that. And it took a lot of people by surprise. So they felt like they had a pretty compelling case for why they did not deserve the punishment that they did. And people around Oklahoma State feel that they still have a very good case to make to the NCAA Appeals Committee in this case. And, you know, I think after the first decision, they probably feel a little bit less confident that they could win the case. But again, Oklahoma State people that I've talked to feel pretty confident that, you know, their case is compelling enough that, you know, maybe the postseason ban will be knocked down. And that would obviously be good news for Oklahoma State fans.
Yeah, no question. I mean, it's just, again, it's awesome when you are a fan of a program and they got somebody at the level of Cade Cunningham getting ready to enroll, particularly at a place like Oklahoma State. Like at Kentucky or Duke, you get one of these type of guys, if not four of these types of guys, every season. But at Oklahoma State, it's a little more rare. So, you know, to have that moment and then not be able to, at this moment, have an opportunity to see it all the way through wherever it might lead, a little deflating. But still, you know, they do have the appeal. And so we'll wait and see. And maybe, you know, if Mike Boynton gets lucky, they'll be able to actually compete in the 2021 NCAA tournament. Either way, again, big story from this week as it relates to the Big 12. Maceo Teague withdraws from the 2020 NBA draft. Now we wait on Jared Butler. And one last thing on this that I think is worth pointing out, because our former colleague Sam Vecini pointed it out at The Athletic. The deadline for underclassmen to withdraw, according to the NCAA, is August 3rd. Yep. But the NBA's deadline isn't until August 17th. So the way Sam explained it, and I hadn't thought about this until he brought it up, but it makes perfect sense, and it is worth noting. A player like Jared Butler or Luka Garza or anybody else could withdraw from the NBA draft by the NCAA's deadline, but then still re-enter the 2020 NBA draft as long as they do it before the NBA's deadline, which I believe is August 17th. So that means that the deadline that is coming up next week is a deadline in the NCAA's eyes, but it doesn't necessarily mean that if you hear a player has withdrawn by August 3rd, that they are 100% not going to be in the 2020 NBA draft. I should make it clear. I don't suspect somebody's going to, quote, withdraw by August 3rd and then re-enter before August 17th. But that option does seem available to them. Is that the way you understand it as well?
Yeah. And that kind of underscores just how bizarre and weird the college basketball calendar kind of is right now. But yeah, that's the way I understand it too. And I don't think there's going to be a lot that will change between August 3rd and August 17th. You know, they're not going to have a vaccine in a week and a half and things are going to change and we're going to have a lot of players doing individual workouts and things like that. But yeah, there is technically two deadlines, which is something to monitor. Like you said, I don't think it's going to change that much for a lot of these prospects who have been in the NBA draft for several months now, but certainly an interesting kind of loophole type situation for draft prospects.
Right. So that's it. Deadline is August 3rd. And I guess the biggest names we're waiting on right now as it relates to the impact they could have on college basketball, probably Luka Garza and Jared Butler, is maybe Ayo Dosunmu as well. Like any other big names we're waiting on. As we sit here, we're recording. It's 10:23 Central on Friday morning.
Yeah, Xavier Tillman is probably the one that that immediately comes to my mind. Michigan State star who I think is probably a first round prospect if he stays. I think there's been some buzz that he's maybe considering coming back, but yeah, he's definitely one that if he comes back to school could be a really interesting, impactful college basketball player again next season. And then he'll impact the draft if he stays. Tyrell Terry from Stanford, another one that I'm kind of keeping an eye on. I think Stanford has a chance to be sneaky, really good next season if he comes back. And if he stays in the draft, could be kind of a late first round prospect. He's a really interesting shot maker. A guy who is a little bit undersized, but has a lot of skill and is getting some draft buzz too. So those are two guys that I would probably add in addition to, Jared Butler and Luka Garza, probably the obvious ones.
Yeah. And with Xavier Tillman, I guess I just always assumed he was going to stay in the NBA draft because he's a little older. He's a father.
Yeah.
It just made sense to get on with your professional career, whatever that looks like. And I'm with you. I think he's got an opportunity to be a first round pick and play in the NBA for a long time, but there is some, as you put it, buzz that maybe he does come back to Michigan State for one more season. If he does, that obviously is an awesome thing for Tom Izzo's program, which has been enjoying one awesome thing after another in recent weeks, mostly on the recruiting trail. Right now, Michigan State is set up to have the number one recruiting class in the country in 2021, thanks largely to the commitment of a five-star stud, Amani Bates. And if they were to, on top of all of that, get another year of Xavier Tillman, they would be operating Michigan State at the top of the sport again next season. All right, let's move on. So this week, the SEC joined the Big Ten and the Pac-12 in committing to a conference-only football schedule. It is also more or less what the ACC is going to be doing. I would assume the Big 12 will do something similar. What, if anything, does that mean for the sport of college basketball? We're going to get into that next. But first, check this out.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So this week, the SEC joined the Big Ten and the Pac-12 in committing to a conference-only football schedule. It's more or less what the ACC is also doing. And I would assume, like I said, the Big 12 will do something similar. Kyle, do you anticipate college basketball following this lead? Do you think, and I should be clear, we're guessing mostly at this point, but do you think we're headed toward a conference-only basketball schedule for the 2020-21 season?
I can't say with certainty that will happen, but I feel pretty confident that something is going to change, whether that's they push the season back and make it a second semester sport, or they do conference-only scheduling, or they do flex scheduling of some sort. I think that we're heading towards some sort of change in terms of teams or conferences moving their scheduling. I think that's kind of inevitable. But yeah, at this point, you know, we're still months away from, I think probably college basketball making hard and fast decisions at this point. But yeah, I think conference only scheduling is certainly something that conferences will consider.
This is the question I get asked every day in some form. And honestly, college basketball coaches are asking each other every day in some form, like, what is our season going to look like? Is it going to happen? When is it going to start? And the truth is, there is so much focus on college football right now from athletic directors, conference commissioners, university presidents, and chancellors that college basketball is just sort of totally on the back burner. Like, football starts sooner and it's the bigger sport by far. And so they're just not going to worry with what college basketball looks like until they figure out what college football is going to look like, which is like happening right now. And also until they figure out if college football can work. Like, right now, you know, we've learned a couple of things about team sports in the United States. The most obvious one being that they seem to work in a bubble. You know, the National Women's Soccer League started a tournament, completed a tournament, never had a positive COVID-19 test. MLS is going well. I think they've had 9 straight rounds of tests without a single COVID-19 positive test. The NBA, which got started last night, is going brilliantly in a bubble down at Disney World. The NHL seems to be working inside of a bubble as well. Meantime, baseball's problematic. Yes. I mean, there's more positive COVID-19 tests this morning from the St. Louis Cardinals, and there are 6 Major League Baseball teams that are not going to play their scheduled games on Friday because of COVID-19. Marlins, Brewers, Cardinals, Nationals, Phillies, and Blue Jays. 20% of today's MLB schedule is not happening because of COVID-19, and it brings into doubt whether they're going to be able to get through even an abbreviated season outside of a bubble. And so I think what college basketball ultimately has to do is – you know, see if college football can work outside of a bubble. I'm real skeptical. I'm also hopeful. You know, I'm a college basketball columnist and television analyst. Like, I my career needs college basketball. Like, I want the games to happen, but baseball doesn't have Major League Baseball. They don't have student athletes on a college campus interacting with other students all day, every day. That is what a college campus is in some ways going to look like, you know, come football season. And so, and then football is a different animal than baseball. Like, there is some contact in baseball, but not nearly as much as there is in football. So there's some real questions about whether college football is going to work outside of a bubble. If it does, and fingers crossed, I hope it does. If it does, then I think you can reasonably conclude that, hey, college basketball can also work outside of a bubble. But if we can't do Major League Baseball outside of a bubble well, and right now it's not going well, and we can't do college football outside of a bubble, there is no reason to think you're going to be able to do college basketball outside of a bubble, at which point, if you're going to have college basketball at all, you're going to have to get creative.
Yeah, yeah, I think we're seeing that kind of play out right now in terms of how leagues have structured their return to sports. And I think there's a pretty big contrast between MLB and the NBA. And MLB basically had no plan. I think for the most part, that they're not in a bubble. I think they're the way that they've handled it is significantly different than the NBA, who is in the bubble. They're very strict about how players interact, who they interact with, wearing masks and things of that nature. So I'm a little bit pessimistic about college football, and therefore I think I'm a little bit pessimistic about college basketball, just because I think it's going to have significantly less structure than the NBA has. So if the college football season is able to happen, and there is a chance that can happen without it being in a bubble, then I will be a little bit more optimistic about college basketball. But right now, I don't feel good about it, just knowing kind of the way MLB season has gotten off to such a rocky start and how that probably portends not super great for college athletics.
The frustrating part for me is that when I hear Rob Manfred, the Major League Baseball commissioner, talk about this, I mean, obviously, after they had their first outbreak with the Marlins, he was asked, why didn't you try to create a bubble? It's working for MLS. It's working for the NBA. It's working for the NHL. Why didn't you do it? And his explanation is, and this part at least is, I understand. He said, well, the NBA really just had to play a few games and then start their postseason. The NHL is, you know, doing a postseason. Major League Soccer is just doing a tournament. All of those sports had started. They just had to pick up and finish. We had not started yet. So we have to do an entire regular season before we get to our postseason. And we just didn't think that a bubble was possible for us. Like, I stopped short of that. Like, I understand a bubble was more complex and complicated for Major League Baseball, but not possible? Like, literally impossible? No. It would have cost a lot of money. You would have been asking players to sacrifice a lot. And perhaps the Players Association just would have, you know, just said, we'd rather not play than play inside of a bubble for this period of time. And then, you know, at that point, then you just, you know, maybe you do try to go outside of a bubble. But they didn't even seriously attempt to create a bubble. And ultimately, that might be their big downfall. Again, at this moment, there are six Major League Baseball teams that aren't playing today because of COVID-19. And I largely hear the same stuff from the decision makers in college athletics. They act like a bubble in whatever form is just impossible. And I you'll never convince me it's impossible. You can convince me. I'll acknowledge up front, it's complicated, it's expensive, and it's not without obvious hurdles. But if we find out you can't play Major League Baseball outside of a bubble, and if you are a conference commissioner / university president who is screaming, we have to have college athletics this year because without them, we will be in the middle of a financial crisis. Well, then you better start exploring how to create something that looks like a bubble and get a football season done in whatever form and a basketball season done in whatever form, because just sitting here and assuming, well, it'll work itself out. And I don't know that folks are still assuming that, but they spent like 4 months assuming, oh, I'm sure it'll be fine. Well, we now know it's not fine. And if the Major League Baseball experiment doesn't work outside of the bubble, if you want college football and college basketball, you better start getting really creative and not assuming that your sport will work outside of a bubble, even though that one didn't, because it almost certainly will not.
Yeah, it's not impossible to do a bubble. Anyone can do a bubble. It's complicated. And I think you're adding a layer to the college level that you're not dealing with at the pro level. College players are different. They're in a campus environment. They have different, maybe temptations, you could say, that pro players don't have. And we're also talking about amateurs. They're not being paid to sit in a room and kind of abide by the laws of the bubble. So there's a lot of different dynamics that would make a college bubble a lot more complicated. But certainly, I think if a season is going to happen and it's going to happen without disruptions, I think a bubble is probably obviously the most rational way to go about this.
Right. Like if Major League Baseball can somehow get this sorted out and actually complete a season, and then college football gets going and it goes relatively well, mm-hmm. not without bumps, but like relatively well. In other words, they start, they complete, and whatever happens in between those two dates happens, but they start it and they complete it. Then maybe something like a conference only college basketball season that starts in January and allows, you know, Big Ten teams to travel to Big Ten campuses and SEC teams to travel to SEC campuses. In other words, Tennessee might play at Mississippi State on a Wednesday and then host Florida on a Saturday, and Texas A&M might play at Auburn on a Tuesday and then host Arkansas on a Saturday night. Like, if football can work outside of a bubble and Major League Baseball can work outside of a bubble, something like that makes sense leading into an NCAA tournament. But if we find out in the coming weeks that baseball can't work outside of a bubble, and in the coming months that college football can't work outside of a bubble, then you've got to come up with something different or just scrap it completely. And the one plan or idea, I should say, it's an idea more than it's a plan, but the one idea that one college coach suggested to me a few weeks back, and we talked about it on the podcast, still seems like the most sensible idea if you determine you're not going to be able to travel campus to campus to campus, even in an abbreviated conference-only schedule. And the idea was, you know, most college campuses are going to clear out at Thanksgiving. You know, that's the way – like I've got a friend whose son is going to be a freshman at Duke, and they are going to live on campus and do – some in-person classes in the fall semester, but then at Thanksgiving, they come home. And then the entire second semester, they've already decided, I believe this is true, is going to be virtual learning. And you know, they don't want people going home and then coming back. So college campuses are going to empty out for Thanksgiving. And even at the universities where students will come back in January, you've still got a pretty significant piece of time where college campuses are going to be mostly empty. So what this coach suggested to me was, if students are leaving at Thanksgiving, let's all load up on one campus day after Thanksgiving. So if you're the Big Ten, pick a campus, whichever is the safest at the time that can handle, what it needs to handle to pull this off. For the sake of the conversation, I haven't studied all Big Ten campuses, how they're doing as it relates to COVID-19. But let's just say it's Penn State. You take all the Big Ten teams to Penn State day after Thanksgiving. And then you test, quarantine for a week, test. And you start playing, let's say, somewhere around December 5th or 6th or 7th. Like, 9, 10, 11, 12 days later. And then you play every other day. You know, like one day Penn State plays Wisconsin, 2 days later Penn State plays Iowa, 2 days after that Penn State plays Ohio State, however you want to do it. Like actually play every other day or every 3 days, whatever you want to do. And it's a good way. Like if you played every other day, you could cram in 20 conference games by the middle of January. And it's a good way to cram in a bunch of games in a pseudo bubble and have something that allows you to create television revenue and also create a league champion. Like, hey, this team finished with this record. This team finished with that record. Then let's have some version of a conference tournament so we can have our at-large bid and just be in a position to have a 68 team NCAA tournament. Because the more and more I talk to, the people who, are ultimately going to be charged with making decisions as it relates to how we try to take off toward a college basketball season, the one consistent thing I hear is we have to have a 2021 NCAA tournament. If we have to build a bubble on an island or borrow Disney World from the NBA, like one way or another, we have to have a 2021 NCAA tournament on television. And so you're starting from that and working backwards. How do we know we got to have this thing. How do we get to that thing? Yeah. And again, if we find out Major League Baseball and college football can't work outside of a bubble, then you're going to have to create a bubble of some form to try to do college basketball, or else you can't have a 2021 NCAA tournament. And that becomes financially devastating for a whole bunch of people.
Yeah. And to me, that's the reason why you just kind of kick the can down the road, move the games to spring, or start the games. You could do the bubble scenario that you described, where you start the games in December and try and just rush conference play, or you could start the games in January and just go conference only. I think the more time you have to be able to kind of game plan this out, the more beneficial it will be for college basketball. I think ultimately we'll have a NCAA tournament next season. I feel oddly optimistic about that, maybe for no reason, but I feel like at some point they're just going to be able to figure it out. Just the more time and more knowledge they can gain from some of these non-bubble situations, including college football and MLB, the more prepared and I think the more successful college basketball will be.
And the other thing, if you want to be optimistic, and provide another reason for, as you put it, kick the can down the road, is what we might ultimately learn is that Major League Baseball is having problems right now because our country is having problems right now because cases are spiking in too many states. But we can still, you know, at least theoretically get this thing under control. Like, just because it's a bad situation now doesn't mean it can't improve. And I obviously live in the South where people regretfully have not taken this virus as seriously as they should. It's why hospitals in my home state are starting to overwhelm. Dude, like 2 days ago in Memphis, do you know what the positivity rate on tests was? I think it was maybe yesterday. Like what, like they say anything above 10% is a real problem. What do you think the positivity rate was in Memphis yesterday?
I'm going to guess 11%. That'd be pretty high.
52%.
52?
52%. More than half of the people who were tested in Memphis, when the results came back yesterday, more than half tested positive for COVID-19.
Holy smokes.
It's incredible. But like now, and I say that to say this, now there's a mask ordinance in the city. You can't go in anywhere without wearing a mask. 2 months ago, I would go into my local grocery store and I was the only person wearing a mask sometimes. I that's an exaggeration, but it felt that way. Like I was way in the minority. Now you can't go in that same grocery store where I'd say 90% of the people weren't wearing masks. I mean, it's crazy. I'd see an 80-year-old woman in a shopping cart wheelchair. I mean, she is like the perfect example of somebody who will end up, on a ventilator. And she's just like riding around Kroger, no mask on, couldn't care less. And so that same grocery store that would have that scene, now you can't go in that place without a mask on. So it is possible that by November, December, January, that as a country, we have the virus more under control. And then it becomes easier for college football to exist and college basketball to exist, and they wouldn't run into some of the same problems Major League Baseball is already running into. So that's the other thing. And I think you've seen college coaches, athletes, all make this point, athletic directors make this point over and over again. The key to having college football in some form and also college basketball in some form really might be tied to getting our country to get this virus under better control. We will still live with it until we have a vaccine, and we won't be back to normal until that vaccine comes. And, you know, hopefully that's sometime in 2021, but obviously it's not guaranteed. But we, you know, other countries have shown they can function better than we're functioning right now once they get the virus under control. And so there's no reason we can't do that other than, it doesn't appear that we as a country are very good at it, but maybe we'll get better. You know, we always talk about basketball players improving their shooting or, becoming a better ball handler. Like we as a country just need to improve our mask wearing and our social distancing. And maybe that will. And I guess this was my largest point. That'll be the thing that allows college football and college basketball to avoid the problems Major League Baseball is going through right now.
So to be clear, GP, you are a sports writer and you are on record rooting against the virus. Did I get that right?
I could not be rooting more against the virus. Like we ran into that this week and I had a reply on Twitter that I guess got retweeted a bunch, but it's so frustrating that, you know, listen, our country changed on March 11th. That's the day Rudy Gobert tested positive. NBA shut down. Next day, NCAA tournament canceled. We really haven't been back. We really haven't been the same since. And more than 150,000 Americans have died. And for a while in too many parts of the country, the plan was hope. Like, hopefully everything will get better by October. Hopefully everything will get better by December. Well, hope's not a plan. And if we didn't understand that before, God, I hope we understand it now. But anytime as a quote unquote sports writer, you talked in realistic terms as opposed to optimistic terms, people, just some dummies would suggest, oh, it sounds like you don't want sports back. Like when, if I say, man, I'm real skeptical that a college basketball season is going to be able to start on time, which is something I've been saying for a long time. I think now nobody would even push back when I say that. But for a while, if I'd say, man, I just don't see college basketball, like my buddy John Rothstein would tweet, you know, Texas A&M is scheduled to host North Texas on November 14th. A source told John Rothstein, and I'd always be like, yeah, I doubt it. I doubt that happens. I mean, I'm sure it's on the schedule, but I'll be shocked if that game actually takes place. Now nobody would push back, but for a while, folks would be like, oh, it sounds like you don't even want college basketball. Like, what? Like, my job, my primary job is to fly to New York and be in a studio and talk at halftime of games. If there aren't games, I don't know how useful I am. And so, of course, I want sports back. A, I host a sports talk radio show 2 hours a day. You ever tried doing that when there's no sports? Not the easy. I got through it, but it's not the easiest thing to do. And beyond that, like, you know, let me be clear. I want sports back. I want my children in school. Like, I've got a first grader who's not going to go back to school next month. Like, that is depressing, but also very, very difficult on me and my wife. Like, I have all of these jobs and my wife is a store owner. And so to have, you know, a 17-year-old entering his senior year of high school and a 6-year-old entering first grade and a 3-year-old who like loves to color on walls if he gets too bored. Like this is an awful way to live. Like my problems are better than most. Like we've got it, all things considered, pretty good. We are at this moment healthy and still employed. And I know that, you know, and I haven't lost a loved one to this virus. So I know not everybody listening right now can say all of those things. I've always try to remind myself, like, even when I'm stressed, my problems are better than most people's problems. We're doing okay. But it doesn't mean it's easy to live like this. And so I want the virus suppressed. I want the virus under control. I want my children in school and I want college sports to be back ASAP. And in fact, it's why I roll my eyes when people say, oh, you're rooting against the virus. You know what? From day one, I've been socially distancing. From day one, I've been wearing a mask. I canceled my family's vacation. We have a pool in the backyard. We haven't had a pool party, not once this year. Like, I've actually been doing everything I can personally do to do my part when it comes to getting this virus under control. I'm not the problem. The problem is probably the people who are out there tweeting me talking about I'm rooting or people like me are rooting against sports. So hopefully we can get those folks to put their stupid mask on and then we can ultimately watch college basketball at some point in late 2020 and if not, early in 2021. That's my rant.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was shaking my head the entire time in agreement. I think there's a way to look at this pragmatically and think that, you know, we have some concerns about the season while also simultaneously rooting for the season to happen. So there's maybe not that much nuance there, but yeah, I'm absolutely in that camp and been wearing my mask. You know, we haven't been able to see friends or family that much. So it's been tough, but yeah, I absolutely hope the season happens and people need to wear their mask and hopefully it will.
Yeah, like I've seen my dad. I'm lucky enough to live in my hometown, or like right next to my hometown. And my mother and my father both live, you know, within 10 minutes of me. I've seen my dad twice in the past 5 months, you know, like just because he's above 65 years old and he is, he has underlying medical conditions. It's just like not safe. And so, like nobody wants this thing suppressed. I don't want to say nobody wants to suppress more than I, but like I'll put myself pretty high on the list. And so hopefully we as a country will do better. And if you want me to be optimistic about something, that's what I'll be optimistic about. That when I'm, like I was out at the WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational yesterday and they're not allowing fans, but there's still a lot of people out there because it's a television event. So there's cameras everywhere and, you know, and there's people walking around everywhere. And this is outside on a golf course where it's very easy to socially distance. And still, like everybody was wearing a mask, even walking outside 98 degrees. And so that is encouraging that I have found in the place where I live, where there were real virus skeptics from the jump, and still they exist. I see it on Facebook. I have seen a real change in behavior around here. And if people around here are changing, I would imagine people basically everywhere are finally, starting to understand that the only way to get this thing under control is to start doing your part, whatever your part is. And so, I've said consistently, like, I'm hopeful, but I'm not going to be intentionally dumb to make people feel better about the likelihood of college sports happening in 2020. But if we do, have a change of behavior that reverses these trends, then I do think it's possible to have college sports in 2020. And 100%, that's what I'm rooting for. And I know you are as well.
Yeah, I think living in Tulsa here, I'm hoping that Tulsans will kind of come around to the Memphis way of wearing masks. I think we're probably a month from getting to that point. Maybe it's going to take Tulsa getting to a 50% positivity rate to get there, but I'm still hopeful.
Yeah. Hey, no more rallies. Okay.
No more rallies. I don't think we'll have any more.
Yeah. Let's hold off on that for a while. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. Antigua. He's a legend. Shouts to Larnell. And thank you for listening to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast in a slow time of the year during a pandemic. We don't take that for granted at all. So, again, always appreciate you listening. If you haven't subscribed yet, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. And either way, I'll talk to you again real soon. Until then, take care.
CBS Monday.
NCIS.
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Finally, not Linda got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.